Hare Krishna to all the wonderful devotees of ISKCON Bergen County, and a happy Mother's Day to all the wonderful, beautiful mothers out there. And thank you so much for having me once again in your association. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kalpataru bhayascha kripa sindubeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Ananta koti vaishnavrindi ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Today being the Mother's Day, I thought we'll take up something from Srimad Bhagavatam, some life story of a glorious mother from Srimad Bhagavatam. And we see in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Ramayana, in Mahabharata, we hear the stories of so many glorious mothers, whether it is Suniti, Dhruva Maharaj's mother, from the chapter 4, where we see how Suniti, she guided Dhruva Maharaj towards Sri Krishna, or whether we see the mother of Narad Muni, how she guided Narad Muni in the right path. We all know how Narad Muni was taking the Uttishta Prasadam of the Bhakti Vedantas, and he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. Or we see the mother in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Mother Aditi, how she does the payovrata, and that's how she pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vamandev comes and takes everything from Bali Maharaj and rightfully hands over to her sons, the demigods. And not only that, we see that how Mother Aditi guided all her children in the right direction. We see all the demigods, they were always worshipping the Supreme Lord. Similarly, we see Mother Devahuti. She was also the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapil Muni. So similarly, we see the Supreme Mother Sita Devi, how she guided her children Love and Kush, and how Love and Kush used to glorify and sing Ramayana everywhere. So we see the examples of such glorious mothers in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Ramayana, in Mahabharata. But today we will especially talk about an illustrious mother who was a wife of a chivalrous king, who was a daughter-in-law of a very pious dynasty, who was a mother of the favorite devotees of the Supreme Lord, and who also happens to be the aunt of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is Mother Kunti. So we all know how Lord Krishna says, Mama pranahi pandavas chaiva. He says that Pandavas are my life and soul. So today we will discuss about Mother Kunti, who happens to be the mother of the favorite devotees of the Lord. And she is very intimately connected to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. So we see here, if we see the life of Kunti Devi, it's very unique and beautiful. Because you see, even in case of Mother Yashoda or Mother Devaki, their love eclipsed the fact that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They loved Krishna as their son. But they were not aware that Krishna is God. But we see in the case of Kunti Devi, all through her life, she has been aware that Krishna is God. At the same time, she also handles the relationship that she is sharing with Krishna, of an aunt, of a nephew, in a very beautiful manner. And especially Kunti Maharani is so glorious, because we see Sukadev Goswami, when he has put the Kunti Devi's prayers in the beginning. We see, I believe she is the only lady who has come up with such beautiful stutis. We see in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, from Asloka number 18 to 43, 26 verses, Kunti Devi comes up with such beautiful, profound prayers, so deep with emotion and love, and so philosophical, with deep conviction. So this is something so beautiful. So today we will discuss in very brief the life of Kunti Maharani, because her life itself is like a big roller coaster. How, you know, from childhood to her marriage to when she gives birth to the Pandavas, and the exile, and the way she leaves her body is also very exemplary. So if we see the life of Kunti Devi, she was born as Pritha. We all know that she was the daughter of Surasena, who is one of the kings in the Yadu dynasty. And Surasena also happens to be the father of Vasudev, who is the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is how Kunti and Vasudev are siblings, and that is how she is related to Krishna as aunt. And then we see how Surasena's friend Kunti Bhoj doesn't have children, so he adopts Pritha as his own daughter. And Kunti Bhoj is the ruler of a kingdom called Kunti. And because his kingdom's name is Kunti, when he adopts Pritha, he calls her Kunti. So thus Kunti Devi, she gets the name of Kunti. And then we see how Kunti Devi, even from her childhood, she was very sincere, beautiful, with all beautiful qualities. And then we see how the king Kunti Bhoj, he also happens to be a very pious king. And it so happens one day, we all know this very famous story of how Durvasa Muni comes there to the kingdom of Kunti Bhoj. And everybody is so afraid to serve Durvasa Muni because he always has this curse on his tongue already if anybody offends him. So then Kunti Bhoj handles over the responsibility of taking care of Durvasa Muni to his daughter Kunti. And Kunti does it very sincerely. And the way she serves Durvasa Muni, Durvasa Muni becomes so happy that when he is leaving the palace, he gives a very beautiful sloka from the Atharva Ved. And he tells Kunti that if you chant these prayers, all the demigods will be at your beck and hand. Whenever you want, you can call them. So then Kunti very humbly accepts the blessings. But now what happens, Kunti being a young girl, what happens with children when they are in young age? They want to try out everything. So what Kunti does is that one day when she is lying down in her apartment and the window is open, she's looking at the sun god and she's just thinking that Durvasa Muni has given me this mantra, but does it actually work? And then looking at the sun god, she tries that mantra. And when she starts chanting that mantra from Atharva Veda, the lo and behold, Suryadeva appears in front of Kunti Maharani and says, well, here I am to bless you. And Kunti Devi is like, I'm sorry, I just wanted to try whether it works or not. I don't need anything from you. And then Suryadeva says, well, these mantras from the Vedas are very powerful. You know, it can't go fruitless. When I have come here, I have to give you something. So now, you know, you have to accept a son from me. And then Kunti Devi says, well, this is not a blessing. This is a curse. I'm an unmarried girl. What will I do with the son? You know, I mean, kindly excuse me. And the sun god insists. He said, I can't help it, Devi, because you have called me. Now you have to accept the blessings. So Kunti Devi is horrified. She doesn't know what to do. So here is sun god, and he places the sun in Kunti Devi's lap, and off he goes. And here is Kunti Devi, a young unmarried girl, in the inner chambers of her palace with a newly born baby boy, and she doesn't know what to do. Now, the baby boy, being the son of the sun god, is very beautiful looking, and he's born with the earrings, and he's born with an armor, and very effulgent looking. And Kunti is so pleased when she looks at him, but at the same time, she's reminded that she's a princess, pious kingdom. And see, it's just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yad yad acharat shreshta, whatever the big people do, the other common people follow. So in those days, the kings, the prince, they were so careful in their behavior, because whatever they do or they don't do becomes the culture of that kingdom. So now she was very worried that I'm here with an unmarried, I'm unmarried girl with a boy here, and if the citizens come to know, they will criticize and it will be a wrong example. So then she doesn't understand what to do. So what she decides to do is put the boy inside a wooden box, you know, and she just puts the boy in a box afloat a river. And she just prays to sun god, please protect him. And she prays to Varun Dev, she prays to Vayu Dev, please protect him. But I can't keep him because this is my situation. And I thought this was also one very beautiful lesson one can learn, is always keeping the interest of others in front of our interest. You know, Kunti Devi, she was very attracted. It was her first son. But she kept the interest of the kingdom, the larger interest, in front of her own interest. And then very reluctantly, she just leaves the box afloat. And then we all know the story of how Karna in the box, you know, he on the river, floating in the box, he reaches family of the charioteers, and that is how he comes to be called as Sutaputra, the son of the charioteers. And then we see back here in Kunti's life, she gets married to Pandu. And King Pandu, belonging to a very glorious dynasty, is a very pious king. But then unfortunately it so happens that one day Pandu is on his hunting expedition, and then he kills a deer. But the deer is not a deer. The deer is actually a sage. And the sage's name is Kindama, the Kindama Rishi. Now this Kindama Rishi had taken a form of a deer, and he was mating with a doe. Now he doesn't know this, Pandu, and he just puts his arrow. And when Kindama Muni is hurt with the arrow, he immediately comes to his original form and he curses Pandu Maharaj. He said, how could you do that? You know, I was in a very intimate situation mating with my wife, and at that moment you have put this arrow on me, and I curse you that whenever you try to mate with your wife in future, you will die. So then as soon as Pandu gets this curse, he goes back to Hastinapur and he informs everybody. And then he decides that now since I've got this curse, I've already, he has the guilt of have done Brahmahatya, a Brahman Hatya. And those days, that is a very big thing. Because Kshatriyas, they protect the cows, they protect the Brahmanas. And Kshatriya killing a Brahmana is unheard of. So he's horrified, you know, what did I do? So then he decides that I don't want to enjoy my kingdom anymore. I will go and live a life of an ascetic in the forest. So we all know that a wife has her destiny intertwined with the husband. When the husband is prosperous, the wife enjoys the throne. But when the husband becomes a pauper, she simply follows. That's the Vedic culture. So then what happens? The queens of Pandu, that is Kunti Devi and Madri, they just follow him inside the forest. And I thought this was also one very beautiful lesson that we can learn from Maharaj Pandu, that how, though he was a king with so much Aishwarya and opulence, at one moment, in a moment, he was ready to leave all the opulence and live a forest life, which is so difficult, easily said than done, because people are naturally so attached to their house, to the family, to the assets they possess. You see, nowadays it is so difficult for a normal householder with one wife, two children, small apartment, a little opulence to give it up. And here is a king who was practically the king of the whole world. And in a moment, he is ready to give it up. And I thought that was very beautiful. And even the fact that he accepted that it was his fault is also such a big thing. Because it says in the scriptures that for one to understand one's own fault is very difficult. It says it is something like you are watching a black ant walking over a black stone on a black Amavasya night. Now what is the probability that you can even see that black ant? Because everything is black. So this is how the situation is. For us to see our own faults is very difficult. We always need somebody else to help us. We always think we are fine. But here you see the glorious Pandu king. He understands it's my fault. I'm guilty and I shouldn't have done that. And immediately he accepts his fault. See, even we see in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, when he gets cursed by Rishi Sringi, he doesn't complain, why me, or what did this happen to me? He immediately, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, he uses a very beautiful word. Parikshit Maharaj says, sadhu, sadhu, good news. Oh, good news. Did I get cursed? Oh, good news. Because the kind of activity that I have done, I need to be cursed. I need to be punished by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I thought that was so beautiful. This is what we see, the difference in the devotees of the Lord. Even when they are punished, they're having such clear understanding that I am punished because of my own karma. I deserve more. Oh my Lord, I deserve to be punished more. You are so kind to me that you have reduced the punishment. Right? We see that, in the life of Srila Prabhupada, there is one incident when Srila Prabhupada was cooking and then his finger gets cut. And immediately he says, Krishna is so kind. And immediately the devotees out there are like, his finger is cut. And the first thing that comes out from his mouth is, Krishna is so kind. That is what the devotees are. Whenever they see some kind of a misery or any suffering inflicted, the first thought that comes to their mind is, Krishna is very kind. Maybe I deserve to suffer more, and Krishna has maybe reduced my misery, right? So then Srila Prabhupada explains to the devotees, probably my hand supposed to be get cut, and maybe Krishna just cut my finger. So devotees, they have such clear understanding, right? There's one very beautiful story in the Puranas of how this one man who's been praying to Lord, help me, my Lord, save me, protect me. And while he's praying like that to the Lord, a stone comes and hits him from the back. And immediately he gets upset. He said, oh my God, my Lord, I'm praying to you. And here I am, you send a stone to hurl at me, hurt me. And then Lord immediately smiles and says, look back. And then when he looks back, what he sees to his surprise is Lord is standing there, and there were 100 stones coming towards him, and Lord protected 99 stones, without going towards him. And this was just this one stone which hit him. And the Lord is like, I'm sorry, did it hurt you? I was trying my best that nothing hurt you. And then the devotee was embarrassed, that Lord protected me, 99 stones were, I was protected from 99 stone, and this one stone hurt me. So devotees, they are having such clear understanding that Lord is my well-wisher and Lord is always protecting me. So here we see in the case of Pandu, there is no complaint. Why me? That is the beauty of the devotees. They are not worried why this happened to me. What they are worried is, what am I supposed to do now? They don't want to carry forward anything to their next life, because they're very sharp. They know that whatever sin I have committed, if I don't get the results of this sin in this lifetime, and if at all it's carried to the next lifetime, then I'll have to pay with interest. So they're very smart in accounts. They want to get the result in this lifetime and finish it up. So you see, in the case of Maharaj Pandu, he's not blaming anybody. If it's you and me, we will try justification, clarification, and it's not my fault actually. I didn't even know that he was a deer. I was just walking in the forest, and how do I know that Rishi Kindama will be as a deer? We'll give all kinds of justifications, all kind of clarification, and all kinds of passing out the fault. It was not my fault actually. It was the fault of my charioteer. He brought me this place, right? I remember in the childhood reading this very beautiful story. All my childhood I was reading this book called Tinkle, and it used to have very, very witty and beautiful stories with moral. And I remember this one story of very funny story of Mullah Nasruddin. He once decides to rob a house. So he goes to this house and he steals whatever he wants to steal. But it so happens, unfortunately, that he cuffs. And when he cuffs, then the people in the house, they get up. And then they catch him and they put him, in the police station. So now finally when he goes to the court of law, the judge asks him, do you want to say something in your defense? So then Mullah Nasruddin says, yeah, my Lord, I want to definitely say something. Kindly arrest the man who sells ice cream, next to my house. So the judge is like, oh, really? So he was also part of this conspiracy of the theft. Then he said, yeah, definitely he was. So they called the ice cream fellow, and he's also in the court of law. So did you also be part of this theft? And he's like, I don't know nothing. I simply sell ice creams. So then they turn to Mullah Nasruddin. What way are they involved? So then Mullah says, look, I was healthy, fit and fine. I went and ate the ice cream. Because I ate the ice cream, I got cough and cold. And because I got cough and cold, when I was robbing this person, I coughed. And because of that, now today I am put in this situation. You know, I am in the police station. So you must arrest this fellow because he is also part of it. Now that's so funny. And I guess this is what we all do in our lives. Always blaming the others. Today I am in this situation because of this person or because of that person. But we don't understand that is all the play of our own karma. Nobody has any role in that. Whatever we do, we just simply getting the results of those activities. But here Maharaj Pandu, being a very wise king and well read in scriptures, he did not lament. He was ready to retire. So the beauty of these kings and why they were called Rajarishis is they were very well prepared to retire. Even when these kings entered the Grihastha ashram, they entered with a very clear understanding, with a motive to become Vanaprastha in future. Nowadays it's other way around. People enter the Brahmachari ashram with a motive to become Grihastha. This is what is happening. Why do people go to colleges or residential schools or hostels? Though they are entering into Brahmachari ashram, the whole preparation is how to become a Grihastha. They want to earn good money, have good wife, children, have a luxurious life. So even when they are entering the Brahmachari ashram, their whole motive is how to become a good Grihasthas. But in those days, even though when people entered the Grihastha ashram, their whole motive was how to become a Vanaprastha or how to become a sannyasi in future. So even when they entered their Grihastha life, they had a complete planning. This is what I'm going to do up to this age, and this is what I'm going to do after this age, and this is how I'm going to retire. But we see our lives are like Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu, he knew how to enter the chakra view, but he didn't know how to come out. Same thing with us. We know how to enter the Grihastha life, but we don't know when to come out. And then we are stuck there till the fag end of our life, being attached with our wife and children. In this context, I remember this very beautiful example was given by His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj. He was saying that our lives are like, you know, when you drive a car on the road, you see those traffic lights. Now, what do the traffic lights signify? When it's a green light, that means you can happily drive your car. But when it's orange, oh, you know, you need to slow down because very soon the orange will become red. Similarly, in this human form of life, when we are young, oh, well, all right, we are in full speed. Oh, I have to do this, oh, I have to accomplish this, oh, I have to settle my wife, oh, I have to settle my children. But then we need to plan it out. After 40, oh my God, you know, it's orange now. And any time the orange will turn red. So before the orange turns red, you need to pause. You need to pause. We don't even know what's the goal of our life. We don't know where to stop, right? The whole life is not going to be green. So when you cross 40, you need to be a little serious. Anytime orange or anytime red. And pause. And I was thinking one thing is that, you know, during this lockdown, one benefit that everybody got is, everybody got some time to reflect. Everybody got some time to pause. Because the way our lives are so fast. We get up in the morning and off to school, the children and the ladies are, you know, their household work, or if they're having a job, the men are busy running here and there. Everybody's getting so busy in their lifestyle. But now when everything is paused, people have time to slow down and reflect. So this is something like, if you're going in a flight, your journey is very fast. You can't see things. You're going in a rocket, it's very fast. You can't see things. If you are in car, okay, you know, you are a little slow. But if you are in a bullock cart, then you can see everything very clearly, slowly and steadily. Now this is what has happened to our lives now after lockdown. Everything has slowed down. And now it's a good time for us to reflect. What am I doing? What's the goal of my life? You know, so we see in the case of Maharaj Pandu, you know, he was ready to give up the royal life and take up the life of ascetics, you know. And then what happens that his wife Madri and Kunti, they accompany him, and they're living the life of ascetics. But then once it so happens that all the sages and his wise ministers, they come and approach Maharaj Pandu. And they say, what about our successor? Because you are here in the forest, so who's going to rule the kingdom in future? So then they decide, since Pandu cannot have any relation with his wives, they decide that probably in those days it was possible that the sages, the wise sages or the renunciate sages were actually invited sometimes to mate with the queens for a progeny, for a good progeny. So then they all decide that maybe Kunti Devi can, you know, help out in that. So then Maharaj Pandu, he approaches Kunti. And then Kunti Maharani is like, no, my lord, I'm very chaste to you and it's not possible. I don't agree for that. And then Kunti Devi, she comes out with very beautiful arguments. And we can see that if we read that parva in detail, how she gives so many philosophical arguments or advices to her husband. And then she tells him a story about a king who once, when he died in the battlefield, he had died without any successor. But he had such mystic powers that even though he was dead, when his wife comes running to the battlefield and hugs him by the power of his mystic power, he implants a child in her, in his wife's womb, and then she gives birth to the successor for the kingdom. So Kunti Devi tells this story to Maharaj Pandu, and then Pandu says, but that's all right, but I don't have any mystic powers and there's nothing I can do. And I thought that was also one very beautiful thing, that wife doesn't mean only that you simply enjoy the opulence of your husband or, you know, cook and feed, but she has a very bigger role because you are partners in Krishna consciousness. And you have to take up the all kinds of role in a life of your children, in life of your husband. A counselor, a mother, a friend, a guide, all kinds of role. And you have to guide each other, right? It's a very beautiful relationship because you see, unlike in the one in the sannyas ashram or brahmachari ashram, in the grahastha ashram you have a facility that on your journey back home, back to Godhead, you have a partner who can guide you in every step. Because sometimes it's very difficult for us to decide for ourselves. We always need somebody else to help us or tell us where we're going wrong. So it's a very beautiful partnership where you guide each other, where you help each other. And that is possible only if you read the scriptures and you have a Krishna in center. Otherwise, even your advices to each other will be materialistic unless you have Krishna in center. So I keep always telling this in my lectures, that between the couple, there should be the divine couple. When both husband and wife are looking at Krishna, then everything is very beautiful. Because in this world, we have two kinds of relationships. There is the horizontal relationships that we share with our family members, and then there is a vertical relationship that we share with Krishna. So both the relationship have to harmonize for a beautiful life. And you see in the life of Kunti Devi, because she always had the focus on Lord Shri Krishna and she was a devotee, she could give proper guidance to her husband. So then Kunti Devi says, well, all right then, I have a solution. And then she reveals this secret. She says, I have this power, I have this blessings of Durvasa Muni, and I know these mantras from Atharva Ved, and I can call these demigods and we can have a progeny from them. And Maharaj Pandu, he becomes instantly very happy. He says, it's a privilege to have such a great progeny. I'm blessed. You know, our kingdom will be ruled by great personalities, the sons of these great demigods. And I thought that was also a very important point. Because I remember reading in Ramayana how when Sita Devi, she went to the forest with Lord Ram, she was very young, just 14 years old. And she doesn't know what to do whole day around in the forest. And Lord Rama had asked her that, why don't you go to the ashram of Anusuya? Atri and Anusuya were living close by, and go and help Mother Anusuya. So Sita Devi, being a young girl, so full of energy, she used to go and help Anusuya, cutting vegetables or you know, whatever the roots or herbs they have from the trees, helping her cook and all. So Anusuya was very happy with Sita Devi's help. And one fine day, Anusuya tells Sita Devi that, look, you've served me so nicely, Sita, I want to bless you. Then Sita Devi says, I don't need anything. The only thing, mother, I need is kindly advise me how to be a good wife. So then Anusuya gives very beautiful instructions. We won't go much deeper into this. But she tells that four important things that a woman needs to do. And in that she says that the first qualification of being a good wife is that one should be chaste to the husband. That's a minimum qualification. And second thing she says is that wife needs to be like an axle connecting everybody in the family. We see the ladies, they play a very important role because they connect both the families. Their own mother's father's side and the side of her husband. And then the third point he says that the wife should be patient and tolerant. She should have this good quality of being patient and being tolerant. And the fourth quality she says is they should be able to keep a secret. That's very important. Because you see, in those days, the kings, you see, there were so many things on their head which they can't share with everybody. So when they used to come to their inner chambers, if they used to share those secrets with their wives, these wives were so efficient that they never let out the secret. Because if they would let it out, sometime it may cause chaos in the kingdom. Because they're very, very important political secrets. So they were such beautiful companions or friends to their husband in every situation. Because see, every time, you know, in anybody's life, sometimes you feel you want somebody to share your things. But if the partner is not efficient, you can't even share, then you become lonely. So then these qualities we can see in Kunti Maharani. She had this secret, you know, and she kept it. She never revealed it to anybody, and she revealed it at the right time. And why did she keep the secret? To protect the honor of her father's side. Because if anybody would have come to know that she knows these mantras and this is what happened. And in fact, even the secret that she had a child before marriage, she very well kept it to protect the honor of both the families, the family of her father and the family of her husband. But at the right time, she revealed the right information that was required. So then they become very happy. They invite all the demigods. And then we all know how the Pandavas are born. And how she also gives the mantra to Madri, and she invites Ashwini Kumaras, and how Nakul and Sahadeva are born, and how all the five glorious Pandavas are born. But then what happens? At one point of time, King Pandu is subdued by his lower nature. He gets attracted to Madri and he wants to enjoy with her. Now I thought there was a very hidden beautiful lesson here. Though he was such a pious king, though he was such a glorious king, but there were times when he also could not control his lower nature. See, the Shastras say that our consciousness is like water. Water, it always flows down. Similarly, our consciousness, it will always flow down. Unless and until you protect your consciousness, there are all chances that it will go down. We see in the lives of such great kings, such great saints, there have been moments in their lives where they have been subdued by their lower natures. We even see in the life of Kashyap Muni, how Diti approaches Kashyap Muni at the wrong time for having an intercourse. And then Kashyap Muni is like, this is not the right time, it's twilight. And Shiva will be going around with his ganas, and it will be an insult. But Mother Diti, she does not agree. And then finally they end up having a relation. And after the act is over, Mother Diti is so guilty about it. Oh, how come I could not control my lower nature? And then she hangs her head in shame. My dear husband, I'm really sorry. I don't know. I couldn't control myself at that time. So now what will happen? Because I did this grave mistake of, you know, having a physical relation at the wrong time. So then Kashyap Muni tells her very beautifully. He says that now, you know, since you haven't controlled your senses, definitely the child that will be born out of this relation will be an asur, and they will cause a problem for this whole world. You see, in Sanskrit, the definition of asura is Asu means instant and Ra means Ramanti. So those whose minds are, going around or are indulged in instant pleasure without thinking in what's the result of this in future are called Asuras. Because they're always thinking about instant pleasure. You know, in English there is a saying that says, look before you leap, right? You first have a vision and then have an action. So those who are devotees, even before they talk, speak, walk, they're always thinking, am I doing right? If I do this, what's going to happen? But then those who are not devotees, those who are asuras, they first do it and then they think, oh, now what is going to happen since I already did it, right? So that's the difference. So then here we see even Maharaj Pandu. And this is an example for us because these people are so exalted. So what about us? So we have to be so careful that we keep controlling, rather keep protecting our consciousness at all times and keeping Krishna in mind. So then Pandu ends up approaching Madhuri. And the moment he does that, he dies because that was the curse. And then when he dies, we all know how Madhuri also enters the funeral pyre. And then she says, because I don't have so big heart, you know, even if I stay back, I won't be able to take care of your children and my children impartially. And you have a, you know, bigger heart, so you stay back and I go, you know, with my husband. We all know that those days they used to die with the husband because even the husbands were so glorious that they used to go to great destinations and they had this power that whenever the wife died with the husband, they could easily carry her to the same destination without her having done much of austerities or pious activities. They simply need to be good wives and the husband had the power to carry them along, you know. So then we see Madhuri leaves the body and then, you know, we just see how Kunti is life. She becomes a widow and then she's here with this five children and she goes to Hastinapur and there she's not treated properly. The Kauravas are always looking at the Pandavas with enviousness. And then we know the story of how Duryodhan tries to poison Bhima. And then they also put into this house of lack and they tried to burn them. And somehow they escape the house of lack. And then they are on their own incognito because the people who have tried to kill them are still, you know, out at large. And then during that time, Maharaj Drupad, he organizes this Swayambar. And then they all go there and attend the Swayambar and Arjuna wins the hand of Draupadi. And we all know how when they come back, Mother Kunti is being cooking something and out of humor or, you know, out of just, you know, they just say, Mommy, Mother, we have brought something, you know, Dakshina. Just see, because when they were living the life of Brahmanas in those days, I mean, it was like a temporarily they were living the lives of Brahmanas because they were hiding. They used to go for begging alms every day. So then they very playfully say, Mother, look what alms we have brought home today. And without looking behind, she simply says, divide it among yourselves. And then we all know how, because Kunti Devi was so righteous that when she says something, it just can't go wrong. So Pandavas were like, when Mother has said this, then we have to follow it. That's about it. They had so much faith on her words. And then we see how Vyasadeva comes later on and explains the whole story about how Draupadi had asked actually five times to Lord Shiva and as a result she got five husbands. We'll not get deep into that story. And then we know how later they are given Khandav Prastha and then how the gambling match happens and how Draupadi has been dragged to the Asat Sabha where there are 40,000 kings and it is tried to strip her naked. And then how we see there's another gambling match and where the Pandavas lose and they have to go for 13 years exile, 12 years exile and 1 year incognito. And at that time Vidur approaches Kunti Devi and tells her that you don't go to the forest with your children because you have become old and you can't bear the austerities, you know, in the forest life as a forest dweller. So she stays back with Vidura. And then we all know how these people after completing their 13 years, when they come back, Duryodhan is not ready to give them even five villages. and then how Krishna comes as a messenger and Duryodhan doesn't agree. Finally, the battle happens, you know, the war of Kurukshetra. And then Kunti hears the news of how all her grandchildren are killed in the battlefield, and all her, you know, relatives and friends, you know, so many of them are killed in the battlefield. And then we know how the Yudhishthira Maharaj becomes the emperor of the world. And then at that time, it so happens that Ashwatthama, after killing the sons of Draupadi, he's not satisfied and he wants to kill even the last hair of Maharaj Yudhishthira's family. So he throws this Brahmastra directs the Brahmastra towards the womb of Uttara. And then we all know how after, because the war is over, everything is the happy ending, and Krishna is on his way back to Dwaraka. So he's seated on the chariot and everybody is bidding him goodbye. And at that time, Uttara comes running from her inner chambers and says, "Krishna, Krishna, please protect me. This Brahmastra is coming towards my womb." And then we all know how Krishna protects Maharaj Parikshit inside the womb. And then starts the beautiful prayers by Kunti Maharani. Whenever she starts a beautiful set of prayers. And I thought that was so unique, because if you see in everybody's lives, we are more sincere in praying to the Lord when we are in trouble. When everything is fine, that prayer doesn't come out. You see, even, you know, for example, even when we go on yatras, the first thing we'll do when we start a yatra, you know, we'll start Namaste Narsimhaya, we'll chant the whole Narsingha prayers. But the moment we reach the destination, we forget Narsingadev. I've never seen anybody after reaching the destination remembers Narsingadev. It's only when you start your journey you remember, because you want his protection. But the moment you reach Mayapur, you reach Vrindavan, you are like, "Mayapur Dham ki jai, where are your bags? Who is getting which room? Let's go." We're all so busy. It's very difficult to remember the Lord when everything is fine in your life. It's easy to remember when you are in trouble. But if you see in the lives of great devotees, they remember the Lord more intensely when everything is happy in their life. You see, in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he was tormented by Hiranyakashipu regularly. But he never once prayed, "Krishna, oh Vishnu, please come and protect me. Look how my father is." He never asked for that. He simply prayed the Lord. But when everything was over, Hiranyakashipu was killed, Prahlad was safe, he doesn't need any more any help from Narsimhadev, that is when Prahlad starts his stuti. Now he starts, "Oh my Lord, you are like this, you are like that." He starts his prayers. He doesn't need anything from the Lord, but he starts his prayers. We see in the case of Kunti Maharani, everything is fine. Now her son is the emperor of the world. Her daughter-in-law's embryo is also protected. She doesn't need anything from the Lord. Now she starts her prayers. "Oh my Lord, you are like this." So beautiful. They don't want anything from the Lord. Now they start their prayers in glorifying the Lord. You know. So I thought that was one very beautiful lesson to learn. It's easy to remember the Lord when you are in trouble. You know, you will intensely pray, "My Lord, please hold my hand. Please don't leave me." But when everything is fine, you are like, "That's all right. Thank you, my Lord. You helped me. But now make place for others. I have so many things, you know. I have responsibilities, you know. So you are there. I love you. But stay there in your altar. I have lots of work to do." But when we are in trouble, we are like, "Please hold my hand. Please be there. Pahi Maam." So that's the difference. So then Kunti Devi, she starts this beautiful prayers, which we can't dive into today because of the time constraint. But special thing about her prayer, which is very popular because of her very different style of prayer. Because, you know, in every prayer you will see they will pray, "My Lord, you are so glorious, this is how you protect." But in her prayer, there's one thing so unique which you will never see in anybody's prayer, where she asks the Lord, "Give me trouble, vipada, I want trouble, my Lord." Because when there was trouble, "You was with me, you were with us, you were protecting us all the time. But now when everything is happy in our life, you are leaving. So better trouble should come again and again. Because if trouble comes, then you will be with us." Right? So I thought that was so unique. How many of them can ask like this to Lord? "I want trouble, because in trouble I am remembering you. In trouble you are with me, if everything is happy." It is beautiful. It is beautiful. And then probably Lord is asking her, that how come you are asking for vipada? Everybody ask for sampada. How come you are asking for vipada? And in that very next sloka, Kunti Maharani says that this sampada, this wealth, and this beauty, and this educational qualification, and this birth in a aristocratic family is a very big obstacle in spiritual life. So, my Lord, I don't want all this, because you are the property of Akinchana. You are the property of one who has nobody but you. So, all these are big hurdles in our Krishna consciousness. And we see, with so many examples in the scriptures, that how when somebody has a lot of wealth, it's very difficult to remember the Lord, because Maya is, in full force, and she'll always drive you away from Krishna, right? When somebody has a lot of good qualities or a lot of opulence, it's very difficult to remember the Lord. One may become proud of one's beauty, one may become proud of one's education, one may become proud of one's aristocratic family. We have seen sometimes, even in the lives of devotees, they may have left their house and have become mendicants. But even at that point of time, it's very difficult to give up the thought of this so-and-so family I belong to. Very difficult. I remember this, I'm not able to recollect immediately the name of this one king who renounces everything. And then once he goes for taking bath in the river. So while you take bath, you have to put your clothes somewhere. So he puts his clothes on a branch of a tree. And somebody else also who is taking bath in the river puts the clothes on the same branch. And when the king comes back, he fights over it. Who is that who has put this cloth on the same branch where I put? Do you even know who I am, So, when the fighting is going on in such way, there is a common village woman who has come there to fetch some water in her pot. So, while fetching water, the name of the king is King Bhartahari. So, while fetching water, when she looks that these two people quarreling, she makes a statement. She said, you two people are quarreling over, this branch of a tree where you will put your cloth or hang your cloth. Look at our king, King Bhartahari. He had so much opulence and he sacrificed everything in one go and became a mendicant. Now, those days, there is no Google and Google images. So, she doesn't know that she's talking about the king in front of the king, She doesn't know he's the same person. So, she just walks away with that statement. And immediately, the king realizes, oh my God, it's true. I have given up everything in the kingdom and here I am fighting over where am I going to dry my kopin or dry my towel, So then he immediately, he saw such a simple village lady gave me such a beautiful lesson. So it is possible that you may give up everything, but the feeling that you are born in such and such family or I am son of such and such person may also drag you down, right? So then, you see, Kunti Maharani, in a very, very beautiful prayers, of course, it's such a deep and extensive subject, which we can't dwell so much deep, but beautiful prayers. Every single sloka in Kunti Stuti, first canto, chapter 8, sloka number 18 to 43, 26 verses are amazing. Jewel pieces, full of devotion and philosophical conviction. It's not that she just makes an emotional prayer. You can see how intelligent she is with the kind of words, And not only intelligent, she's so humble. And that's beauty. Humility is one ornament, one jewel that attracts the Lord. When a devotee is humble, he just takes away the heart of the Lord, And she's so humble. In the prayer, she says that even big scholars are not able to understand you. How can I understand you? After all, I'm just a woman, What can a woman understand? And I thought that was so beautiful. She just takes such a humble position. Actually, it's the other way around. It's not about being woman. She just knows more than anybody else. Even the great scholars can't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she very easily understands who is the Lord. But she puts it so humble. I'm just a woman. What do I know? It says in the scriptures that Kunti Devi is the success potency of the Lord. And now somebody may question, how can Kunti Devi be success potency? Where is success in Kunti Devi's life? Her whole life has been so dramatic, a roller coaster ride. She is born somewhere, adopted by somebody, then she gets married. Oh no, before that, a child, before even she gets married. And then she gets married and very young age, she becomes a widow. And then her sons are put in so much trouble. I know the whole way her life is, where is success? But, the success is defined as where in every situation of life, or rather any situation of your life, if you are able to remember the Lord constantly, then that is your success. That is the definition of success. Success is not how much money you have earned. Success is not how much fame you have earned. Success is not, oh, how beautiful, luxurious life that you lived without any problem. Success is when in every situation you don't forget the Lord. And we see in Kunti Devi's life, she never forget the Lord. She was always praying to the Lord. In fact, I should share this one thing with you. I'm sorry even if I'm going over time. There's a very beautiful temple here in Vishakhapatnam connected to Kunti Devi. Because when the children were in exile, Kunti Devi was so much worried about her children. So she was praying to Krishna, oh, please protect my children. So at that time, she had gone to different pilgrimages. So she goes to Varanasi and there she prays to Krishna. And Krishna appears there in Varanasi. And there he is still worshipped as Bindu Madhav, because Kunti Devi worshipped him there. And then she goes to Allahabad. There she worships Krishna, and then Krishna comes there as Veni Madhav. And then in Rameshwaram, Krishna comes as Setu Madhav. And then in Thiruvananthapuram, he comes as Sundar Madhav. And here in Vishakhapatnam, when near Bhimli, when Kunti Devi is praying to Krishna, she's been praying to Krishna. And then at this moment, when Krishna appears, she says, Krishna, whenever I prayed, you appeared. And on the way he appeared, sometimes looking very beautiful, then Sundar Madhav, having a Venu in hand, then Venu Madhav, Bindu Madhav. But I want to have a memory that you appeared for me because I called you. So then here, they call Madhav as Kunti Madhav, the one, the Madhav who appeared to please Kunti Devi. So we see in India, there are these five Madhavas, very famous. And they all appeared as a result of Kunti Devi's prayers. So we see how Kunti Devi, at every situation in her life, has not forgotten Krishna. We see even in the life of Sita Devi, when Hanuman goes to Ashok Vatika and he is asking Sita Mata that now that I have seen you, mother, what message should I give to Ramji? How are you? What should I tell him? And then Sita Devi makes a very beautiful statement. She tells Hanuman that tell Lord Ram, I'm fine. And Hanuman is like, what is this? I mean, you know, she's away from Lord Ram. And then she makes this very beautiful statement where she says, Kahu Hanumanta Vipatti Prabhu Soi Jagat mein jabatav sumiran bhajan na hoi. Said, Suna Hanumanta, listen Hanuman. You know, when is a problem, Vipatti Prabhu Soi, please tell my Lord. You know, when the Vipatti is, when there is trouble, jabatav japa sumirana bhajan na hoi. Vipatti or problem in life is when we forget Lord. If we are not forgetting Lord, then every situation is a beautiful situation. You are in trouble when you forget Lord. If you have not forgotten Lord, then even in the times of trouble, you are fine. Because you are... See, we see in the prayer of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what he says, Kita janma ho jatha tuva das, bahir mukha brahma janme nahi as. Even if I am born as a worm, that's all right. But I should be born in a house of a devotee. But even if I am born as a four-headed Brahma, if I cannot remember Lord, then I don't want to become Brahma. Please excuse me from there. So beautiful, right? But she never forgot Krishna. Every moment of life, She was remembering Krishna. You know, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is one very beautiful verse, a stuti by Brahma in the 10th canto, chapter 14. Very beautiful stuti. We should, you know, you can just read it in detail. But there's one particular sloka, it's my personal favorite that I like in Brahma stuti, where Brahma says in, I think it's sloka number 8, he says, Tatte nu kampa susumai kshamano. He says that, my Lord, we don't have to do anything. We just have to stay in your devotion, silently bearing the results of our previous karma. And definitely, if somebody does that, then he becomes your daya bhak. He becomes a recipient of your mercy. So to become a recipient of your mercy, what they need to simply do is just to tolerate. That's all. And it's my personal favorite. Such a beautiful thing. It's just this one word in a devotee's life. Tolerate. I was just, you know, if you read that sloka, 10th canto, 14th chapter, sloka number 8, in the purport, there is this commentary by Sridhar Maharaj. And in that commentary, he gives a very good example. He says, just like a legitimate son of a father, to inherit the property of the father, he doesn't need to do anything. He simply needs to stay alive. And when the father dies, the property of the father simply goes to the son. For that, he doesn't need to make any extra endeavor. Similarly, a devotee, he doesn't need to do anything. He simply needs to stay alive in Krishna consciousness. That's about it. If he can stay alive in Krishna consciousness, at the end of his life, he will become the recipient of Lord's mercy. Just have to stay alive. Jive to. Just be alive. Don't give up Krishna consciousness, right? It's very, very, very beautiful. You know, just somehow tolerate, because these problems will be there. You can never have a life which will be 100% perfect or 100% beautiful, because you are in this dangerous world. Srila Prabhupada very nicely says in one of the purport, he says, you know, some devotee is saying that there is some problem, there is some danger, and Prabhupada is very nicely mentioning some place. I'm not able to recollect where exactly, where he says that you have put yourself in this dangerous position. So why do you expect that they will, you know, that there will be no problem? You have put yourself. So we have put ourselves in this material world. So only thing that we can do is tolerate and wait. And if somebody can just stay in Krishna consciousness somehow, then he becomes a rightful recipient of the Lord's mercy. So we see in Kunti Devi's life, she's just there, you know. And that's the beauty of devotees. You see, I'll tell you one very short example and then we'll end it here. You see, small children, when they get hurt, you know what they do? If they're hurt or something happens, the first thing they'll do is they'll go to mother. Oh, mother, I've got this hurt. But those who are grown up, when they get hurt, they don't cry. Oh, my mother, I got hurt. They know what to do. They'll put Dettol, they'll put sofromycin. So this is a difference between Jnani and Bhaktas. Jnanis are like those grown-up children. Oh, they know what to do, or they're very wise, and they'll try to control their senses. But devotees are like those little children. For everything, they'll go, mommy. You know how the children, they run, the young children, they'll just run, mommy. For devotees, it's like that. They're like young children. For everything, they'll go to Krishna. For everything, they'll go. Any trouble, they'll go to Krishna. For anything, they'll go to Krishna. And you see in the life of Pandavas, you see in the life of Kunti Devi, for every trouble, they had only one solution. That is Krishna. They just run to Krishna. And that is why you see Narad Muni, he's telling at one place, oh my Lord, look at these Pandavas. They have gone through so much trouble, but still they don't leave you. It's amazing. Because if anybody would have been in their place, they'll say, my Lord, you say, mama pranahi Pandavas chaiva, the Pandavas are my life and soul, but you're giving so much trouble to us. So if you give so much trouble to your life and soul, you know, what about others? What example you are putting? But Pandavas, they, at no point of time did they leave Krishna. For any trouble, they always had only one solution, and that is approaching Krishna. So Bhaktas are like that. For everything, they run to Krishna. And from life of Kunti Devi, this is what we can learn. very beautiful example that no matter what happens in your life, you just run towards Krishna. And that's our only option. Our lives are like those small children, you know. Sometimes you see the children, they're holding their mother's hand, father's hand, and they're walking on the road. And sometimes they'll just leave the hand and they'll try to walk on their own. And then they'll see sometime a dog is approaching or dog is barking. Immediately they get afraid and then they'll run back to the mother. You know, oh my God, this dog is barking. This is what they do. So this is what the devotees are supposed to do. When they read the shastras, the shastras show them that dog of Maya. Hey, look what's happening with you. And what the devotees are supposed to do is, because they left the hand of Krishna and then they're faced with this dog, this Maya. They're simply supposed to run back to the father, run back to the mother and hold the hand. It's as simple as that. But the problem is with us is, even though we are seeing the dog, instead of running back to the father, we are running in the direction of the dog. And that is why we put in trouble. So what we simply need to do is, Shastra is showing us that dog. We simply need to run back towards the mother, run back towards the father and hold hand. It's as simple as it is. So on this occasion of Mother's Day, we learn this beautiful lessons from life of Kunti Maharani, that the success in life is defined as that in any situation of life, you don't forget Lord and you take shelter of the lotus feet of Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. So I'll end it here and I'll pause for any questions. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. All right, so the question is, after the age of 40, what does Vanaprastha look like? Actually, the Shastra says Vanaprastha is after 50. But keeping in mind the present situation in Kali Yuga and our shorter lifespans, I just said 40 because you never know what happens. So the quicker, the better. So what do I mean when I say pause and look at life? It's where you define your goals and you start working in that direction. It's very important. You just don't keep going for the sake of going, right? Just don't get into that routine of earning money, taking care of wife, children, business, home, eat, food. Oh no, you need to get out of that. So at some point of time, you have to start surrendering. You have to start giving up, you know. Now you should stop interfering in minute details of everybody's life connected to you. And start making retirement plans. The quicker, the better, right? Those who are smart, they plan their finances. So those who are smart, they plan their life too. Okay, now what I'm going to do? Because otherwise, with every rising and setting of sun, there is one day less in your life. You're just running towards death actually. See, the problem is, if you're not able to see Kala, that is the problem. We are not able to see the dragger. We are not able to see the death. If we can see the death, things will become very easy. But the problem is, we are in the world of illusion. We are not able to see death coming towards us. You know, our lives are like those of a frog. The frog planning to eat the butterfly, making all grandiose plans. And as the frog is ready to eat the butterfly, at that very moment the snake comes and eats the frog and all your material plans are foiled. This is what is with our life also. We are making so many grandiose plans. But the problem is, we are making these plans because we think we are permanent. If we are always in that consciousness that this is not permanent, then you will definitely plan your life in a different way. Let me tell you one very beautiful story here I'm reminded of. Sant Ekanath was approached by one man and he said, Sadhuji, you are such a great saint, you know. How do you manage to not commit any sinful activities? How do you manage to be so pure? You are so nice. I'm not able to do it. I'm so busy with my household life. You know, he approaches. So Ekanath ji says, stop all that glorification of me. You know what? You're going to die in 7 days. Go and make preparations. You know, because I can see that. You know, these saints are great, you know, by seeing the faces, they can predict. So within 7 days, you're going to die. So stop all this glorification of me. Go home and plan out your life. You just have 7 more days. Now this man is horrified. He just came to pray this sage and he gets this news that he's going to die in 7 days. So he goes home and he tells his wife, you know, this saint said I'm going to die in 7 days. What should I do now? He's completely depressed. One day completely goes in depression. Second day goes in LIC office making all preparations for his wife, children, who will get what property. Makes all the arrangement. Everything over. On the third day he starts chanting because just few more days he's going to die. On the sixth day, Sant Eknath visits him. So he says, so how are you? Everything is okay? So he said, yeah. So how many sins you committed this week? So he's like, I'm sorry, what did you ask? No, I'm just asking, how many sins did you commit? So he said, what are you talking about? How can I commit sin? I'm just going to die in 7 days. I've been so busy with so many activities. There was no time also to think about sin. So Sant Eknath says, well, you are going to die on the seventh day, right? Today is only sixth day, so you had time. So he said, are you crazy? When you know that you're going to die in 7 days, how can you even commit sins? I couldn't even remember of any sinful activity. So then Sant Eknath says, it's not about 7 days or 70 years. When you are constantly in consciousness that you're going to die, you will never commit sin because you know you are temporary anytime you have to go. So what I meant by Vanaprastha was that just to come into that consciousness, into that mood, that I'm temporary. If you can just be in that consciousness all the time. Of course, it's easy said than done, but scriptures help us in that matter. When you constantly keep reading Srimad Bhagavatam, take association of devotees, then you are in that constant remembrance that any time you have to leave this body. And if you are in that consciousness all the time, then you don't need a training of how to be Vanaprastha. It will come naturally. Right? Just like you go to, you are on a vacation and you know that you're going to stay in that place just for 3-4 days. You are so sharp. You don't want to waste your time. In the 4 days, you already make a big list of sightseeing. These are the places I want to see. I don't want to miss. I just have 4 more days to go, right? Nobody has to come and tell you that don't waste your time. I've not seen anybody who goes on a vacation and simply sleeps. He's so worried because he's paying every day the bills of the hotel and he's eating food outside. He's worried I have to finish up seeing all these places and I have to go back. So if somebody is in constantly that consciousness, I'm sure they don't need any training. It just comes naturally. You know, the Vanaprastha will come naturally. I hope it answers your question. I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Very beautiful question. So your question is that in devotional life, we have been taught that we are not supposed to ask anything from the Lord. So during the time of trouble, if we are asking something from the Lord, is it a fruitive activity? No, it's not. Depends upon what is your way of asking the Lord. See, for example, if you ask the Lord, you know, that remove these troubles from my life so that you want to enjoy your material life better, then that may become a fruitive activity. Not fruitive activity exactly. Anything to do with Lord is not fruitive activity. So let me clarify one point there. So because you know what it says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, whether you have akama, sarvakama, mokshakama, whatever, you have one desire, you have many desires, just approach Krishna. Because the moment you approach Krishna, then everything becomes spiritualized. Now, it's the way of your asking. What is your intention? Because Lord gives a lot of points for your intention. So if you're asking that, Lord, please remove these problems from my life so that I can have a better spiritual life, there's no harm in that. But having said that, when we ask the Lord, our asking itself is so faulty. We think that we are very intelligent. What we do is, we tell our problem to the Lord, and we also give our solution to the Lord. Lord, this is the problem and this is the solution of the problem. So kindly execute this solution. Now that is where we make a mistake. I guess he knows better solution. So you simply tell your problem to the Lord and let him give the solution. But the problem is we think we are very intelligent. We think if this is a problem, this has to be the solution. But sometimes Lord has his own way. Your problem, you may know only one solution. But Lord knows 100 different solutions for that. So that space you have to give to the Lord. You know that this is my problem and you do whatever is best for me. Even that doesn't need to be said actually. He knows what to do. In fact, even if you don't go and express your problem, Lord knows very well. Because it's just like a mother. Mother knows very well what the child wants. But this whole process of us going and standing in front of the Lord and expressing our problem is just for our purification. Because in this time of problem, if we don't go and speak to the Lord, we'll end up sharing it with somebody else. You know, this is what happened to me, you know that. Or you will be constantly meditating on that problem. But it is a psychological process. But if simply you go and stand in front of the Lord and share it with Him as your friend, then it's better, you are approaching Him directly. But even if you share it with Him or you don't share it with Him, anyway He'll sort it out. Because He's your well-wisher and you are surrendered to Him. But there's no harm in going and expressing it. But don't try to give solution. He knows what is the best solution for you. And He'll do it. So just go and express your problem. There's nothing wrong in doing that. But the beautiful part is, whether good or bad, whether you are asking the Lord to help you from the problem or you are asking the Lord for some desire, the moment you approach Him, He will purify. The only thing is, you worship only Him. If you can just maintain that. And nobody else. That one thing. That He's a monopoly God. It's only Him. That's it. And nobody else. That one thing we should maintain. At no point of time should we get attracted for quick solutions. Quick fix. Or approach Shiva or Durga Devi or some demigod and just let me get my things quickly. Don't do that. Because Lord has a better plan for you. Like you see in case of Narad Muni. Narad Muni's mother died. Now somebody will be like, Narad Muni, devotee of the Lord, why did his mother die? Why did Lord didn't help him? But Lord created such situation in his life because He wanted to accelerate Narad Muni's spiritual life. If his mother would not die, he would never be able to follow the Bhakti Vedantist and he could have never go further in the spiritual journey. He would have simply stayed back because his mother was a widow and he had to serve his mother. So Lord has His own way of giving solutions. So when you approach Lord, approach, but also be 100% ready to accept His solutions, not your solutions. Whatever way He gives solution. And the other beauty is when you approach the Lord, you get purified. Sometimes you even get purified of that desire itself. Something like Dhruva Maharaj. He approached the Lord that I want to be rich. I want to be king. But in this whole process of approaching the Lord, when the Lord finally appeared, He said, I don't want anything. I'm sorry. Here is a diamond and I was simply asking for some pieces of glass. I don't want anything, my Lord. So that is the benefit of approaching the Lord, and nothing wrong in approaching the Lord when you are in trouble. Thank you. Very beautiful question. So your question is that even great devotees like Kunti Maharani was tested. Even Sita Devi was put in so much trouble. So we see sometimes the devotees are put in so much trouble. So what about, you know, in our lives, you know, how do we motivate ourselves to go on even though we are put in trouble? So that is why I was mentioning this sloka, Tatte Nukampa Susamikshamano. That is, if we can somehow tolerate, then we can become the rightful patra, the rightful candidate for Lord's mercy. So, as devotees, when we see that, you know, pure devotees are put into trouble, it is just that Lord is giving us a lesson that look, even when they are also put in trouble. Anybody who is in this material world will be put in trouble. If there are no trouble, believe me, we'll be settled in this world. We will be so comfortable. Imagine if everything is very happy in your life. Oh, there is no way you will remember Lord. You will feel I'm just fine, you know. Yeah, Lord, you are there and thank you very much. But I don't think I need anything from you. So the way of this giving of trouble is one way of just reminding us that look, this is not your place and you need to come back to me. Now again, having said that, it's not that Lord is some kind of a cruel person who wants to give you a trouble so that you come back to Him. It is just that this material world is made in such a way. And it's not that somebody pushed us from Goloka Vrindavan. We jumped from there. It's not that Lord pushed us go there and suffer. It was voluntarily our decision. And we came to this material world, which is Dukhalayam and Ashashvatam. The world is made like this. So there is no escape. This is something like, if you're just having, you know, wearing a white shirt, white pant, and white socks, white gloves, and you walk inside a black coal mine, which is full of coal dust, and you say, nothing should happen to my white cloth. It's not possible. You are walking inside a black coal mine. Definitely, there is going to be some black ash on you too. So if you are in this material world, definitely you're going to face some problem. You cannot say that there shouldn't be no problem, because this is made like this. This has been created like this. This world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So everything that is there in there, this is spiritual world. The material world is the opposite. So definitely there will be kuntha. That is why kuntha, where there is no problem. And this is kuntha, which is full of problems. So the only thing is, at least when we see and read the lives of great devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam, we are motivated, because we see that how they manage their life. Even though they were put into so much trouble, they never once forgot Krishna. So at least we can take inspiration from their life, and we try to follow their example. Actually, pure devotees, they don't have any karma. They don't have any previous sinful karma. But trouble comes in their life only because through their life, Lord wants to show others that what happens when a trouble comes in devotee's life. How does he react? So when we see his example, then we know, oh, this is the way we are supposed to react when trouble comes. So we get this. That is why you see in the life of Yudhishthira Maharaj, so many problems. Life of Kunti Devi, so many problems. Life of Draupadi, so many problems. Life of different saints, whether you see Tukaram, whether you see Narsimha Mehta, whether you see Mirabai, you will never hear about anybody, any saint, any devotee, that he was born and everything was so happy in his life, and everything he did so happily, and then he died happily. Never, never. Oh, there is trouble always. This happened to him, then that happened to him. You know, like in the life of Srila Prabhupada, it was not a happy life. So many problems, trying to make a temple, then some problem, then somebody made a case against him, then something, all the time. But never once Prabhupada said, you know, my dear Lord, this is not fair, I'm just trying to do something for you, I don't have any personal benefit here, I'm just an old man, 70 year old, I'm trying to do something for you, and this is the way you treat me, you don't even help me, every moment I have problems to deal with, no money. Right, Prabhupada had no money, sometimes he didn't even have money for breakfast, and so many troubles that he went through. So this is the life of the great devotees. So they're just giving us example that look, this is how this material world is, and by listening and hearing to the lives of the great devotees, we are encouraged. You know, let me tell you one thing. You know, one way of looking at the stories of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, in this world, our psychology is like this. Personal problem or personal misery is a suffering. But common misery is a bliss. You know, especially you see in India, the moment, you know, the current goes off in your house, you know, the light is off, the first thing you'll do is you'll open your windows and balcony and see, what about other people's house? Do they have light or not? If the current has gone out in their house or not? If everybody's power is off, then you don't feel misery. Then you're happy. But if it's only you who are suffering, then you are sad. If it's only you who missed the bus, then you are suffering. If everybody has missed, then you feel happy. This is our psychology. So one thing is that to satisfy our psychology, there are so many examples in Srimad Bhagavatam where we understand, oh Baba, it's not only us, everybody who were there in this material world has gone through so much misery. Everybody has gone through so much suffering. So this is one good example Lord has put in front of us, you know, giving us so many trailers. Look, this is a problem, but you have to surrender to me, and that is the only solution. So, to put it in one line, whenever we are put in such kind of a situation, just take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, read the scriptures, then you understand how this world is temporary. See, you will feel it is a problem only when you think you are permanent in this world. If you think you are temporary, then you will understand every problem is a passing phase. Why do we feel bad? Because we think we are permanent in this world, right? And many times I give example, you know, my personal life example, how I was once traveling with my son from Vizag to Bhubaneswar. My husband was not with me, and it was in the very early years of ISKCON Vizag. And it was such a crowded train, and it was such a big suffering. But all through my journey, there was one thing in my mind that it is just for 4-5 hours, because Vizag to Bhubaneswar is very close, and I'm going to get down very soon. Now imagine if somebody thinks I'm going to stay permanent, that is where the problem comes. If you are in the constant remembrance that this is temporary, then you won't feel so bad about it, because you know if there is any inconvenience, it's only temporary, and very soon you're just going to get away with it. So this is one way of thinking, to be constantly remembering the Lord, taking association of devotees, and taking shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. Very beautiful question. So your question is that Pandu Maharaj has not wantedly killed the deer, right? He did it by mistake. Still, why so much suffering? And still, why did he accept, or why did he become guilty about it, though he never did it on purpose? Now, that's the beauty of the devotees. They understand that everything that happens in this world, if you were there in my previous class in the same forum, I was explaining about how everything that happens in our life has three reasons. One is an immediate cause, one is a real cause, and one is an ultimate cause. So sometimes something happens, there is one immediate cause. Like the immediate cause of Pandu getting this curse is what he did. But the real cause is that he must have done something in his previous life, or some previous life karma which is carried forward. And the ultimate cause is Supreme Lord. So whatever happens in our life, the immediate cause is very visible. We can see, because of this person the trouble came, or because of this problem the trouble came. But those who are intelligent, they also see that there is a higher cause behind it. See, the thing is, our vision and knowledge is so limited. This is something like, let's say, somebody knocked the door. So I just go and open the door. Now you can say, Mataji went and opened the door. The other way of saying is that you can say, Mataji's hand went and opened the door. The other way of saying is that Mataji's fingers opened the latch, or rather, fingers opened the latch and opened the door. Now you are right, my fingers did it. You are also right when you say my hand did it. But you have a bigger picture when you say I did it. Because when you see my fingers and my hand in connection with me, then you are seeing a bigger picture. This is what the devotees do, and that is why they are so cool. Because for everything they see a bigger picture. They just don't see the fingers doing it. They just don't see the hands doing it. But they see the fingers and hand in connection with Krishna doing it, in connection with the body doing it. So that's why there is no complaint. So whatever happens in their life, they know it is because it is all by the supreme will of the Lord, and some connection with our previous karma, because Krishna is never unjust. He is always doing justice. So even if we see troubles in pure devotee's life, we may not want to think that they must have done previous karma. Then we can think that maybe it's just that by their example, Krishna wants to show us that this can happen, right? Or how to behave in that particular situation or circumstance. So in case of Pandu Maharaj, we may think, oh, he didn't do anything wrong. It was not on purpose, but it is some carry forward from some previous life and karma, and it is predestined to happen this way. This is all part of Lord's Leela. If Pandu dies and then Kunti approaches demigods, and then the illustrious Pandavas are born. So it's all part of the Leela. I hope it satisfies your question. Thank you. So your question is that if somebody is trying to hurt me and I don't want to hurt the person, how should be my consciousness? Like I tell in every class that there's so many ways of looking at it. You see, even when the person is hurting you, you can always remember that there must be some previous karmic bandhan, you know, because of which is simply... you see, whatever happens to you, if you can get this one formula stuck in your mind, it will be very easy. Let's see, I have a pen here, alright, and I throw this pen on him. Now what will happen? He will throw the pen back to me. It is as simple as that. Whatever I throw will come back to me. if I have a flower here and I throw the flower comes back to me. Now when it comes back to me, if I complain, why is this happening to me, then there is no answer for it, because what you throw comes back to you. But there is one solution for this. You threw pencil and he threw pencil back on you. But what you can do this time, a little change in your life. This time when he throws pencil back on you, you throw a flower back on him. That's about it. That's a solution. So that next time you will get flower back. So now when you are going through the results of your previous karmas, where people are blaming you or hurting you, this time don't hurt them back. Close the meeting in a very happy way, so that next time the meeting will start in a very beautiful way. What is happening is that we have so much carry forward from our previous lives, that the whole life is busy in nullifying those carry forwards, right? See, I'll tell you very, very simple. Let's say we had a meeting, right? Now we are all in the Zoom conference today, and our meeting ended in a very bad way. Let's say there was a fight and I said something, you said something, and we ended this meeting in a very bad way. Now what will happen? Next time when I come for a Zoom meeting again, there will be a lot of bitterness because we ended it very badly, right? But suppose if I end it in this meeting in a very beautiful way, when we meet again for our next conference, we'll start it in a very beautiful way. Now what has happened is that in our lives, we have not ended our meeting with certain people in our previous life in a beautiful way. So what happens is, in this life we see, Arey, I didn't do anything to this person. Why is this person so harsh to me? Because you didn't do anything now, but the meeting has, in the previous meeting, has not ended very well. So it's just a carry forward. So now, even though in this meeting you have come up very humbly and very nice mood, but the problem is the previous meeting was not ended well. So now it will start with that bitterness only. Because that is why, see, sometimes you will see, I am so nice to this person, I don't know why. Or sometimes even it may so happen that to certain people, from beginning you don't have a liking. You know, you will feel something happens whenever I look at this person, I'm not so comfortable. Only thing is, because your previous meeting with that person has not ended well. So at least now what can we do is, let us end this meeting in a very beautiful way. So now this time when this person hurts you, even though you have not hurt him, kindly end it in a beautiful way. That means don't react. Be nice, ask forgiveness, and not only forgiving the person. Let me tell you this one very important point. You know, one mistake that we do in our spiritual life, whenever somebody is harsh to us, unfair to us, what we do is, okay, let me forgive him. It's not about forgiving, it's also about asking forgiveness. You are forgiving him, very good, because of his bad behavior in this life. But my dear sir, what about your bad behavior with this person in your previous life? So you have to not only give forgiveness to people, you also ask forgiveness. So asking forgiveness is not in the literal sense that you go and touch the person's feet and ask forgiveness, because he will think, hey, what is wrong with this person? But at least mentally, you can ask forgiveness. You can tell, you know, I don't know, this jiva, how I've hurt you, he or she, in my previous life, and I'm asking forgiveness. So mentally, whoever is hurting you, without even you being bad to them, keep asking forgiveness, and believe me, it'll work. Believe me, it'll work. Keep asking forgiveness to them in your mind regularly, remembering those people in your life. Keep asking, because I don't know what way I've hurt you in my previous life. I'm sorry. So you ask forgiveness to them and forgiveness to Krishna. Please forgive me, whatever I must have done to this jiva, that this jiva is reacting this way with me. Of course, this is such a big topic in itself. I don't know how much justice I can do by trying to answer it in a minute or so. But this is a whole class in itself. Maybe 10 minutes more. 10 minutes more, maybe. Yeah. 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 Question is that, though we are originally part and parcel of Krishna, how come we are not spontaneously attracted to Krishna? How come our mind is overpowering? It's not like that. It's just that Krishna has given us this freedom, a minute independence to select what we want to do, and it's up to us now what option we select. So this minute independence is given to us, and when we descend to this material world, there is definitely a covering of the three modes of material nature, and then they take us to a different direction. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, mama maya durataya, it's very difficult to come over my maya, because it is also a creation of Krishna, so it's as powerful as Krishna. So only when we take shelter of Krishna can we fight against this energy of Krishna, that is maya. So many times I give this example. This is something like, you know, you go to a person's house, let's say they have a dog in their house. Now these dogs, sometimes they're very fierce, you know, so you just enter the house, they'll bark on you, you know, even if you try to give them some biscuit or something, they will not listen to you. But instead of trying, you know, your best to pursue the dog, the easy solution would be is just call the owner of the house, because you know the owner of the house very well. So the moment the owner of the house comes, he will immediately subdue the dog. So that dog whom you were trying to subdue with so much difficulty, it will happen in a minute, because the moment the dog sees that the owner is your friend, then he just starts licking you. So it's as simple as that. So if we try on our own to, you know, subdue maya, and it is very difficult. But what we can do is maya pati Krishna, just make a relationship with him, and then it will become very easy. Just get a connection with Krishna. Now, why does this happen? Is because we asked for it. Now, this is again a big topic in itself. So, you know, we wanted to stay independently from the Lord. So, here we are in this material world. We have opted for it. But Lord has given us this independent choice. But at the same time, we have an option of taking shelter of the Lord and overcoming Maya. I could not get the question. What I understand the question is that sometimes I understand that it is my mistake, but I continue to do it. Am I right, Ramchandra Prabhu? That is the question. Though I understand that I am committing a mistake, but I am tempted to keep committing the mistake. So what do I do? Is that the question? Yeah, we find excuses, yeah, to commit the same mistake again and again. Yeah, that is how the psychology is, that is how our life is. We'll always try to give some excuses, our mind will give some excuses, right? You know, I remember this story. This one king, he was asked by a doctor that if you eat mango, you will die. So he said, that's all, very simple, I'll never eat mango. But then, you know, once it so happens that they go on a hunting, he and his minister, and they're very tired and fatigued, and they want to take rest under a tree. So there is a mango tree there, and king says, let's go and take rest there. So the minister is like, but that's a mango tree, let's not go and take rest under that mango tree, let's go to some other tree. And the king is like, don't be stupid, I'm not supposed to eat mango, but I can sit under the shade of a mango tree, that's all right. So he just goes and sits there, and the minister is like, what can I say? And after some time, a mango falls, you know, and the king instantaneously picks it up and starts smelling it. So the minister is like, but my lord, you're not supposed to eat mango. He says, are you crazy? Am I eating mango? I'm simply touching it, and I'm simply feeling it, and I'm simply smelling it. By smelling, you don't die, okay? And then after some time, he starts peeling it. And he's like, my lord, what are you doing? He said, nothing, I'm just bringing it next to my nose, I'm not eating it. And then you know what must have happened next, he just ends up eating it. And then he tells his minister, well, I was not supposed to eat mangoes, but I can taste mango, is it not? So our mind is like that, very intelligent. Oh my God, it can every moment make a fool of you. It will give you this reason, that reason, you know. And it'll. So what do we do with this very intelligent mind? So this very intelligent mind should be in control of our guru. That's the best thing one can do, because mind will make you dance. So if that mind you surrender to your guru and Krishna, you know, that I don't know what I'm supposed to do, and keep taking guidance all the time, then the guru will, you know, mark you, hey, this is where you're going wrong, you know. Like, what did the king do? He should have listened to the minister, but he listened to his mind. So like that, we need to have mentors and gurus in our life with whom we share. Well, this is where my mind is taking me. my dear sir, can you help me? So the guru will say, hold on, I'll help you. Oh, your mind is acting too smart. This is not where you're supposed to go. This is what you're supposed to do, right? So yes, if you are taking the shelter of your mind, the mind will make you stupid. So you shouldn't take shelter of your mind. You should take shelter of Guru and Krishna. So definitely it will give you all the reasons to do the mistake again and again, again and again. But you should take shelter, take guidance, and be in association of devotees. And if I want to put in one word, one practical tip is, whenever you make a mistake, don't hide it. That will help. When you hide it, whatever you hide, it grows. Just confess it, and that will help. Of course, you know, you see these Christian people, they have this system of making a confession every week. I'm not trying to say that it's their confession is very stupid, because they think once I confess, the sin is over and I can again go ahead and make another sin. I'm not trying it that way. But what I'm saying is the whole psychological process behind it is very good. So if you make a mistake, just go ahead and share it with your guru. This is what I did. Now, there are two benefits of that. One thing is that he knows then at what level you are. So from there on, he'll help you. Because sometimes we even mask in front of our guru. We don't tell the truth. So then the guru doesn't even know on what level, and poor fellow will think he's becoming pure devotee. So he'll not even correct you, because he'll think he's doing so well, I don't need to correct him. So, but if you are frank and you tell him, look, this is what is my situation and this is what I'm doing, then he will know your situation and he'll help you from there. And the second benefit you will derive from there is, because you are expressing it and you are, you know, confessing it, then there is some kind of a guilt consciousness and you don't want to do it again. Because you don't want to go and again tell him and, you know, oh, this is what I did again, you know. So this is like a mentor student relationship. So if you can do that also, it will help you of not committing the mistake again and again. Just express it. Don't hide it. Just express it with whoever is your mentor, whom you trust. Will not think wrong about you, but will actually guide you in the right direction. Just go and share this, and definitely it will help you from not committing the mistake again. Okay. Three practical tips on handling the lower natures. One thing is that everybody knows what is our stimulus to do any activity, whether good or bad. You know very well what stimulates you. Be careful about that stimulus. See, for example, many times I give this example. You know, sometimes I see even in the lives of initiated devotees. I'm just giving you one practical example. Sometimes it so happens that a devotee is initiated, but his wife and children may not be initiated or may not be in Krishna consciousness. Now, sometimes it so happens that just to satisfy them, he has to indulge in certain activities which may not be Krishna conscious. They may not be anti-devotional, but they may be non-devotional. Now, what happens after a certain time? If he keeps on regularly indulging in such activities, then his previous taste will come back. Because when we are in Krishna consciousness, what we have actually done is, this is something like, you know, a lion. You sometimes, to control the lion, they just give some kind of a medicine or anesthesia to the lion. So the lion doesn't die, but the lion is in hibernation. But anytime the lion can wake up. So when the lion is in hibernation, you don't go and pinch the lion, because if you pinch the lion one time, he may not wake up, two times, but third time he'll wake up and he'll attack you. So our previous tastes are also like those lion in hibernation. They have not died completely because we have not become pure devotee. They're somewhere lying there. You have somehow subdued them. But now if you regularly pinch them and pinch them, then they'll wake up. So if you regularly indulge in, let's say, I'll go for a movie, what can be done, you know, for my children's sake, I have to go for a movie. For my children's sake, I have to eat in hotel. For my children's sake, I have to go for a party. If you regularly go on doing that, one fine day the lion will wake up from hibernation. So don't regularly pinch the lion. Be very careful. We are not pure devotees. So better to stay away from such stimulus. Try and avoid as much as possible. Don't start thinking of yourself as pure devotee. Nothing will happen. I'm 25 years initiated. Nothing will happen. Even once I go, what will happen? Once I go and watch a football match, cricket match, nothing will happen. Anything can happen anytime. So stay away from stimulus. That is one way of, you know, subduing your lower natures. Just learn to say no. No means no. That's about it. Learn to say no very firmly. I won't do it. I won't do it. That's it. I won't associate with these people. Affirm no. Second practical tip will be repetition. If you keep on repeating something, then it becomes very firm. Right? Like many times I give this example, what Prabhupada used to say, you know, about this Brahmana. Yeah, there was some man who was making some Durga Puja sacrifice and he goes and buys a goat. But the three thieves, they decide that we will rob him of his goat. So what they do is, they make a very foolproof plan. They just go and stand in different places. And when this man is walking from the goat's market, you know, he buys a goat and he puts the goat on his shoulder. And he's walking towards his home because he's going to do the Durga Puja and do the slaughter of the goat. Now what these thieves do, at different intervals or different spaces after a few kilometers, they're standing in those junctions. And when this man comes with this goat, na, they say, "Are, how come you are, you know, you being a Brahmin, why are you putting a dog on your shoulder? No, this is not correct, you know." And then this Brahmana is like, "This is not dog, can't you see it's a goat?" They said, "But no, it's a dog, you are mistaken." And this man is like, "You are a fool, I don't want to listen to you." And then he goes a little further and there's another person standing there with the same comment. "Are, how come you are carrying a dog? And this is not dog, this is a goat, why are you saying that?" And then after some time the third thief is standing there and he also says the same thing. "Are, how come you are carrying a dog, you know?" And this time he just looks, you know, said, "Let me see, maybe this is actually a dog. Why are three people saying this is a dog? Maybe I am mistaken. When I go back home, everybody will laugh at me that I brought a dog for slaughter, Durga Puja slaughter." So he just abandons the goats there and runs away. And then this thief, they take the goat and they are happy, you know, on their way. Now what has happened is, because of continuously repeating the wrong thing, he's thought that this is a right thing. That means if we continuously repeat the right thing, then how powerful it will be. Even when a wrong thing is repeated so many times, it becomes firm in our mind. That means if we keep repeating the right thing, how powerful it will be. So that means one way, a practical tip, is repetition. Continuously reading scriptures, associating with devotees, chanting, participating in festivals, rendering service to Guru and Krishna, repeating, if you continuously, because continuously if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, where there are, you know, anecdotes and analogies and so many beautiful instructions, this world is temporary, you're supposed to control your senses, repeatedly if you are hearing it, definitely one fine day you'll be able to give it up. So one thing is repetition, one thing is not waking up the lion, your stimulus, which takes you in the other direction. And the other thing is taking the shelter of the Supreme Lord. Prayer, that's it. You know this one acronym which you can remember in your life. PUSH. PUSH. Pray until something happens. PUSH. Keep pushing, and praying. Because sometimes, even though we try our best to subdue our lower natures, Maya is so powerful. She just cheats us. So then we just take shelter. That means every single day we pray to the Lord. Like, you know, Prabhupada's example, where once Prabhupada was praying, and then some devotee asked him, you know, "Prabhupada, what were you praying so intensely?" And Prabhupada says, "You know, I was praying that, my Lord, I should never come under the influence of Maya." And Prabhupada's disciples were like, "But Prabhupada, just the other day you told us that the difference between you and us is that you will never fall down, and we may fall down, you know, towards Maya. So, and now you are saying that you are praying to Krishna that you should never fall down." So Prabhupada said that is why I'll never fall down. Because I always pray and you people don't pray. Because you people are not sufficiently afraid of Maya. you have overconfidence that I'm all right, I think I'm fine, I'm, you know, sometimes over a period of time, even you do your sadhana and everything nicely, there is always a chance of getting a little ego, you know. You know, and there is this very beautiful thing in Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. I don't want to get into that now. But even sometimes doing good sadhana is also a problem. Because suddenly you will develop so much ego. Hey, I'm so perfect. I never miss Mangala Arati. I chant my rounds. I'm so perfect. So that again is also, you will start another journey towards a downfall in Krishna consciousness. Because of your ego of being perfect, you know. So sometimes it's not good to be so perfect also, right? So again, it's a big topic that I don't want to go into. So praying, so only Krishna can help us. So we just genuinely pray to Krishna, you know, I surrender to Krishna that Krishna, please help me to subdue my lower interest, my lower nature, controlling my senses, and let my senses keep their focus only on you. And you asked me for 3 tips. I'll give you 1 bonus tip, 4th tip. You can constantly read and recite the stutis done in Srimad Bhagavatam by devotees. It will help you a lot. Because we are not now in a stage where we can create our own stutis, whether in English, Sanskrit or whatever language. We are not on that level that we can make our own stuti. So what we can do is, if we keep reading the stutis of other devotees like Kunti Maharani, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, the Kumaras, the Bhishma Dev Stuti, Stuti of Brahma, Indra, Ritsasur, so many such stutis are there, beautiful stutis are there in Srimad Bhagavatam. If you constantly read and pray, because Krishna is very attached to these pure devotees, and when you again reproduce or sing those same stutis which these devotees sang out of so much love and conviction for Krishna, Krishna becomes so happy. Because you see, imagine you are just singing Kunti Devi Stuti, Krishna will become so happy. Immediately you are able to drive his attention on you, because you are saying something which his pure devotee sings for him. So that way you can attract Krishna's attention and constantly pray to him, you know, that kindly protect me, my Lord. I hope this answers your question. Definitely, yeah, my invitation to all the devotees of ISKCON Bergen County, whenever you come to India, please come to Vizag. We have a very beautiful temple right on the ocean, right on the beach. And we have a guest house here, a goshala, and a beautiful, massive, gorgeous temple is coming up for Shri Shri Radha Damodar, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani, Gonita, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shingadev, and Balaji. So very beautiful temple is coming up. So whenever you come to India, do come and visit us. Also, Vishakhapatnam is a dham. This is a place where Prahlad Maharaj retired after handing over the kingdom to Virochan. And from here, he went back to Bhagavad Dham. So we have a very beautiful Narsingadev temple on the hilltop. And it's also Divya Kshetra. And very close by is a Kurma temple. So these are one of the very important places. And also, Srila Prabhupada visited Vishakhapatnam, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur visited Vishakhapatnam, and Madhavacharya, Ramanujacharya, Shankaracharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Vishakhapatnam. So it's a very, very beautiful place, and it occupies a very important place in the Gaudiya history. So whenever devotees come to India, please.
Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Krishna.